Good evening, everybody. It is 6 o'clock. Welcome to the Planning Committee meeting for this evening, the 29th of May. There are one or two things that I need to do before we commence the meeting. So welcome to members and to members of the public. Please can I ask that you have, if you have mobile phones, that they are either switched off or on silent, please. And do all members have a copy of the agenda? Thank you. We are not expecting a fire alarm this evening, so if the fire alarm does go off, please exit to your nearest exit, which is at the back there for you, and the wedding room doors here, and we meet in the car park as the assembly point. Toilets and drinks are down the corridor behind you, to the side of you, and we have a number of speakers registered to speak tonight, and the amount of time allotted to each speaker is 3 minutes. Okay, thank you very much. Do any members have a declaration of interest? Councillor Hope.
Yeah, thank you, Chairman. Item 14, personal, non-prejudicial.
Thank you. If I can declare from the Chair, I have to declare a personal and prejudicial interest in item 11. And I will leave the room and the Vice Chairman will take over for that agenda item. Thank you. Members, have we had any apologies for absence? Thank you.
Apologies have been received from Councillor Andrews. Councillor Thackeray will substitute.
Thank you. Minutes. Members, you've got the minutes of the previous meeting in front of you from the 16th of April. Is everybody happy that they reflect the record of the meeting? Councillor Windrush.
Move them, Chairman.
Thank you. Thank you. Those minutes are accepted. There is an item on the agenda which is urgent business, and I have no urgent business, and we'll move to the schedule of items to be determined. We have 6 items to be determined on the agenda.
From item six.
9 items on the agenda, beg your pardon. The first one is item 6190020 Major Full, Dudley Farm, Wenby Lane, Sheriff Hutton, and it starts at page 9, members.
Thank you, Chair. The application site is Dudley Hill Farm to the northwest of Sheriff Hutton, which is situated in the open countryside and accessed via Wenby Lane. The site extends to approximately 4.5 hectares and incorporates the original farm dwelling, a second dwelling and a range of agricultural buildings, together with a number of fields in the same ownership. This application seeks approval for the change of use of agricultural land and buildings to a mixed-use agricultural and equestrian use to form an equestrian training centre to include the erection of a replacement barn for housing up to 16 horses, the change of use of existing barns to a tack room and crew yard, the erection of a barn extension and covered horse walker and formation of a lunge pit, trotting loop, canter track and gallop track with collecting circle. Just in front of you, you'll see an aerial view of the existing farmstead. Sorry. And this is the barn that will be replaced with a structure of a similar footprint and the extension to the barn will be located here, and the horse walker and lunch pit will be to this side of the farmyard, with the trot-in loop just over here. So as I've mentioned, there are a number of operational developments along with this change of use. And we've discussed the ones that will be located in close proximity to the existing farmyard, and that is the replacement barn, the erection of extension to existing barn, the horse walker, the lunge pit, and the trot-in circle. Then, in terms of operational development further within the site to support the change of use application, there will be a canter track, which would be located from the farmyard to the western extent of the site. There would also be a trot-in loop, which we've mentioned is in closer proximity to the farmyard, and a canter track. Due to the landforms and the landscape and then the particular topography, it's not considered that whilst these do extend out into the open countryside that they would appear harmfully isolated. They would be achieved through the installation of a 1.3 metre high UPVC fence and the installation of compacted stone. So it's considered that they're quite fine in terms of the actual form and wouldn't appear incongruous in this landscape setting. It's also considered that the access track running between the farmyard and Cornbur Hall wouldn't result in any harm to the wider character of the area. So these are some photographs of the existing farmyard. That is the barn that will be replaced with a new barn. Details of materials have been submitted and incorporate grey cladding in a kind of dark shade, which is appropriate in this location. This is part of the shared access track between the farmyard to a property in separate ownership called Cornborough. And then this is where the gallops would begin from the farmyard out westwards. This is some of the existing landscaping, and it shows the rise in topography that will help to kind of mitigate any landscape impacts that could otherwise be experienced. But as we've said, because of the overall scale of the gallops, it's unlikely that these would be an issue in this location. You can see in front of you another dwelling. This is a Cornbur Hall in separate ownership. This is a Grade 2 listed building. A heritage assessment has been submitted with the design and access statement, and our building conservation officer offers no objection to the proposal. It's not considered there be any harm on the setting of this listed building. And again, you're seeing some of the kind of undulating landforms there. In the corner of this field is where the canter track would be located, so you kind of get an understanding of how it would be read against existing landscaping. And that's a closer view of that. And then this is where the trot-in track would be in close proximity to existing buildings, so it wouldn't appear isolated. North Yorkshire Highways were consulted and they offered no objection to the proposed development. The agent has confirmed that all parking will be undertaken within the farmyard. It's therefore not considered that this would have any harm in terms of access or highway safety. As fully detailed in the officer's report, one letter of comment was received from the occupiers of Cornborough, which I'd just pointed out to you before. So you can't see it, but that is the access track leading up to that property. The letter of comment had raised some concerns about maintaining access to the site, which is a civil matter and not something that planning can get involved with. They'd also raised some comments about drainage of a section of the access lane, which is shared between three properties. On the proposed plans, you can see a cross-section of the gallops, which indicates there will be drainage built into that. So it's actually considered that this could present an enhancement on some of the water that may pool there currently. And then finally, we've also had the issue of parking raised in that letter, but as the agents confirmed, that will be maintained within the site. It's not considered that will be any more significant than the existing agricultural use, and it's considered that that's appropriate and to the satisfaction of North Yorkshire Highway officers. A condition has been recommended to ensure no new lighting is to be installed without the prior approval of the local planning authority, and that's considered appropriate to prevent any disturbance or light pollution from the site. Therefore, subject to the identified conditions, we're satisfied that the proposal confirms the policy. Thank you, Chair.
Members, we do have a speaker this evening, and it's the applicant, Mr. McSherry. If you would like to come forward, sir, and take a seat. If you press. Okay, thank you for that.
There is just one quick update, actually, Chairman, because I think arising from consultation with Hambleton District Council and the Parish Council, there was a comment about external lighting, which, as drafted on the agenda, just talks about lighting on the buildings, and I think we intended it to be lighting across the entirety of the site. So it's not just buildings. There needs to be a slight redrafting of that proposed condition.
Questions for the officers? Councillor Potter.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Have we got any indication of what sort of percentage of the land is going to be turned over to horses or horse activities as opposed to agricultural?
I don't have specific percentages, but the application relates to 16 horses as a maximum. And it is a mixed use to not just equestrian, but to retain that dual use. So that's the information I have at the moment.
Councillor Hope.
Yeah, thank you, Chairman. I don't know whether I missed it or not, but is this an owner outfit, just purely for owners, or is it a livery?
I'm not quite sure of the exact breakdown of what the 16 horses, you know, who the ownership would be there.
Thank you for that.
But we can possibly find an answer for you and update you following the meeting.
The follow-on from that was how many cars or wagons are they expecting daily or weekly?
I think from discussions on site, I think there was to be one horse box associated with the development, and I'm seeing nod in there as well, but the one thing I would say is it is currently an agricultural business with no restriction on numbers of vehicles, so in my view the kind of maximum number of 16 horses, it may represent a similar kind of level.
Come back on Councillor Hope's point. I think the planning statement talks about it being a training establishment rather than a livery. I don't think it's livery.
Councillor Mason.
Could you just clarify the relationship between you and the owner of the track again? There's not in the future, if there's any dispute over the rights of way, is there anything in place to protect you?
Councillor Mason, sorry, you can ask the officers, you can't ask sorry.
But I would say I would say land ownership and any matters like that, that's a civil matter that don't fall under the remit of planning, so that is something that would be dealt with by adjoining landowners amongst themselves.
I think the essence of that, however, is that, as you've gathered from the planning training, planning is just one of the things that controls the use of land, and property law is another. So clearly, maintenance, upkeep arrangements, those sorts of things are a matter between either joint owners or, in this case, somebody who has a right of access over a piece of land that somebody owns. And so that's for essentially for the two parties to arrange between themselves.
Have members any further questions? You want to move into debate? Councillor Hope, this is your patch.
It is indeed, thank you. Quite a big carry-on when you look at it all down there, after looking at the farm which I've known for years. But I think the questions, I've got a list of questions here, and they've mostly been answered, so I'm quite happy to move this as officer recommendation.
Councillor Burr.
Thank you, Chairman, and first of all, thank you for the very detailed report. It was very helpful. I personally couldn't think of anywhere nicer to have an equestrian training centre. I think at the moment, obviously, it's a farm, and agricultural vehicles can go there at will. And I think that obviously there will be some movement regarding the training centre, but the facilities that are made available and the 16 horses that are going to be there, I don't think that will be detrimental at all. So I'm really happy to second that. Thank you.
It's been moved and seconded for approval. If we could go to the vote. Thank you. Moving on to item 7, which is 19/00459, Major Full. It is Messrs Stevens, erection of a replacement broiler rearing unit with linked control room, 3 feed bins, 1 number feed blending room and associated hard standing.
Thank you, Chairman. As you'll see from the committee report, this application is again an item that's before you because it's a major considered to be a major development, and that's because of the floor area of the building. Although the broiler house does replace an existing broiler house on this well-established farmstead, so in that sense, the principle is not really one of a great issue for us, Chairman. You will, however, note from the committee report that the broiler house, the new broiler house, is capable of accommodating more chickens than the existing shed. And when I show you the photographs, you'll see how this is probably the oldest shed on the site that's about to be replaced if permission is granted this evening. So if we just quickly go to the photographs, Chairman. This is the this farmstead is located to the north of the village, so you're going up the Wold Hills, and this is looking down what is quite a lengthy access track, and behind this very significant shelter belt, you can just see in the distance an outline of the roofs of some of these buildings. They're quite low profile buildings, obviously being broiler sheds. And if you go down the end of that very long track, which is the nearest public view of the premises, then you get beyond the shelter belt and you can just see the outline of the nearest shed there. So they're quite low profile in comparison with the screening in front of it. And that, looking at it there, you just get an idea that this is an older shed in comparison with the ones that are next door, and similar sort of scale and proportions, Chairman, in terms of eaves and apex heights. So the landscape impact is almost the same. And this is looking back from the rear of those newer buildings, so you can just see the outline of the back of the shed there against this very, very well-established shelter belt, which is probably the most dominant feature in the landscape, Chairman. This is a view just further down the road to the east of the entrance point. So the access track that I showed you the first photograph of was looking down the road along this direction here. This is panning round a little to the east, and at that point there you can see more of the complex, and you can see some of the bigger sheds, the newer sheds. And just in that place there is where the oldest shed is. It's behind the two that you can see in the foreground. It would sit behind there. So in terms of landscape impact, Chairman, it's virtually the same as what you have before you. And that really was the major sort of issue for us when we were looking at any of these types of development in an open countryside location. There are no updates to the report, Chairman, and we do recommend approval. I don't think we have any speakers for this particular item.
There are no speakers. Members, have you any questions? Would you like to debate the matter? Michael.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Yes, and thank you for the report. The site is set within an existing steading. It is sheltered by the shelter belt, as already been said. It's our forefathers have knew about where they were siting farm buildings. It fits in with our plan supporting agriculture and the rural land use. I propose that we accept this application.
Councillor Mason. Thank you. It's been moved and seconded for approval. If you'd like to vote, thank you. Thank you. That's a unanimous approval. If we can move on to item 8, please. This is 18/01035/full, land at Derwent Mount, York Road, Malton, erection of a two-bedroom dwelling. We do have two speakers, an objector and the agent, and I'll now hand over to officers.
Thank you, Chairman, and I'd just like to refer members to the report, which commences on page 46. Appended to the back of the report, there are two different designs of dwelling there, and the reason for showing you that is on page 53 is the design which is the current application proposal, which is what I would describe as a single-storey L-shaped building located towards the rear of the plot. And the dimensions of that are set out in the officer report. Just moving slightly further on in the agenda, you can see on page 56 that the appearance of the building is as almost as like an L-shaped single-storey bungalow, but in quite narrow span. And then I'm just looking for the further designs, Chairman. Starting at page 71, the agenda makes reference to an earlier withdrawn application, and this is on the same plot located towards the rear of the premises. But you'll see on pages 72 and pages 73 in particular, the dwelling that was proposed at that point in time was over two storeys, although it had a slightly lower than normal eaves and apex height. There was first floor accommodation, Chairman, and that at the time gave rise to quite a number of objections in terms of design, but also privacy, overlooking and the like. So the current application is effectively a response to that earlier scheme, which was a two-storey dwelling located towards the rear of the site. If I can just show you some photographs, which I think might assist members who aren't necessarily familiar with the plot. The site is located in the built-up area of the town. And for those of you familiar with coming into the town on the York Road, this is York Road here. And coming down in this direction here is Castle Howard Road. So just as you get to that point there, you've got the war memorial, if you can picture where that is, just off plan. The reason I put this plan on the screen tonight was just really to give members a feel for the character of the layout of development in the locality. Because it's quite varied, and as you travel along York Road, there is a strong pattern of what I would describe as villas, substantial semi-detached properties, which I'll show you some photographs in a moment, with sizeable gaps in between, numbers 2, number 4, 6 and 8, detached dwellings towards the junction. And then turning up Castle Howard Road, there are some, again, sizeable villas, some of them relatively new, actually. They're sort of facsimiles of the older ones that went before. But what this also shows is behind some of those substantial frontage properties are what we might otherwise describe as backland dwellings. And so behind these substantial dwellings here, there's a private driveway which serves three dwellings there. We've got West Lodge Gardens, which obviously, well, that's off a adopted roadway. There's development in depth. And I think this is the newest one, which was built in the early 2000s, called St Andrew's Lodge, which actually abuts the northern boundary of the site. And that is a one-and-a-half-storey dwelling. It sort of sits at the back of the two larger ones here. So the character of the area is not necessarily just frontage development. There is development in depth behind the backs of properties. And that, I think, is what I think has led this application to come in, because I think the view is by the applicant that this is a similar plot. So looking at the photographs now, this is the entrance into the site from York Road. As you can see, it's got quite a wide entrance in a tall boundary wall, which is a character of the town at that point. There are tall walls both sides of York Road, and this is one half of a very large residential property with an access road which goes to the side and to the rear, with the plot itself set well to the rear. You'll also notice from these photographs that the other feature of the locality is there are some very mature trees in that part of the town which form part of the character of the area. Moving further into the site, you can see that there's a sort of gap to the side of the existing buildings, and the plot itself is over to the right, which I'll show you some photographs of in a moment. This is looking back down that access way. So what this also gives you a feel for is that as you approach into the site from York Road, you're actually slightly raising on level. You're going uphill slightly. This is looking across the plot, and this is looking eastwards. So I think what this shows is this is the back of the plot here, and as you come across the back of the plot, there's actually a change in level there of about 2 or 3 feet. Now, on the late pages, there is an amended plan which shows this level reduced so that the floor level is set at the lower level. It's not set at the higher level, and that's in part to set the building down in relation to the boundary hedgerows, which, although they're substantial, the lower the level of the building, the more the effectiveness of the screen is. This is looking, this is on the plot, looking southwards towards the back of two existing properties here. They're numbers 4 and number 2 York Road. Number 4 abuts the southern boundary of the proposed plot. Number 2 is slightly at an angle. And this is looking at that side boundary, and again, where I showed you the boundary hedgerows, at this point here we're looking at the backs of properties on Castle Howard Road. So this is the eastern boundary. The property is set well to the rear. And again, this gives you more of an indication of the change in levels, with the idea that the levels are dug out so that at the back of the plot it's set further into the ground. This is a view looking across the rear boundary. And I think if you're looking at the proposed plans, what you have here is an indication of what is on the boundary there on the adjacent plots, which are separate detached garages. So you've got two garages, a gap, and then a close boarded fence here, which is about 1.8 metres high. The building sits in this corner, and whilst there are two windows showing in that elevation serving a bedroom, they are abutting that wall, so they're not actually looking out into an open space. So there's no perception of overlooking from those two windows. This is looking from the northeast corner of the rear garden of the existing property, and again gives you more of a feel for how the site opens up at the rear. Going back out of the site again now, just to give you views of what, or potential views of this site from the public domain, from the roads and the footways. This is the entrance to number 4 York Road, and this boundary, this planting here, is effectively the boundary of the southern boundary of the plot. So the single-storey dwelling is behind that. This is the view of the, or would be the view of the driveway at number two. Number two is the other half of that semi-detached property I showed you earlier, and you'll see that there aren't really any views of the site from this point. I think number two's recently had this extension garage and accommodation to the side, which is subordinate but blocks views beyond it. This is a view from Castle Howard Road from the first property with an opening there, and again you get the feeling of a very strong feeling of mature trees at this point. It's very difficult to say that there's any view of the site from that point looking at the east. And this is the view looking from the next property up and its driveway entrance, and again that little sort of bush there is the eastern boundary of the plot. So again, if you were stood here you might catch a glimpse of the roof of the proposed building. So I hope that gives you an idea of the sort of setting and the impact and the character of the area, Chairman. I mean, I don't have any updates for the report, and I'm conscious that there are two speakers, so I'll be quiet now and wait for questions.
Thank you. If I could ask Mr. Tate-Smith to come forward to speak, please. If you use the large button at the bottom in the middle. Thank you. So you've got 3 minutes. I will tell you when you're at... You've got 30 seconds left. Thank you.
Good evening. I'm here tonight on behalf of the five immediate neighbours of this proposed development in the garden of number 6 York Road, all of whom are very much opposed to this application. In the local plan strategy policy SP1, the guideline includes an exhortation to ensure development is sensitive and responsive to different character areas. Policy SP12 further states that the Council should seek to ensure the sensitive expansion, growth and land use change in and around the market towns and villages, safeguarding elements of the historic character and value within their built-up areas. It seems clear that this application does not follow either of these guidelines, and this proposed backland development will be detrimental to and out of keeping with the area. This proposal would cause significant loss of amenity to all the neighbouring properties. Due to the size of the plot, the proposed house would be close to boundaries on all sides. The slope on the proposed site and the siting of the house at the top of the slope, I agree he's probably withdrawn this now and it's we didn't know about this, would further exacerbate the loss of light and privacy to all parties. The site is within a conservation area and as such would result in material harm in breach of policy SP12 requirement for these areas. This development will result in a number of trees being removed from the site, which seems at odds with the conservation status. This application has a long history. This is the third version of the building which we have been presented. Both the previous plans were for a much larger house. It is our concern that with new planning laws coming into effect regarding extensions, this small property could easily become something even larger and more intrusive to its neighbours. Number 6 York Road has been previously extended and is currently both a business and a dwelling. As such, there is already a significant amount of traffic coming and going on a very busy road, which this proposed new house can only add to. Permission was granted on 24th of May 2018 for a building to the rear of the existing house, which is not shown on the plans for this application, and will add further to the overdevelopment of this site. Before any decision is made, we ask that you might consider a site visit to truly understand how this property will fit into its tended plot and how it will affect the surrounding properties. Should the decision of the committee be to pass this application, we ask that you might consider the following. My first was that it would be reduced along the site in terms, and that's been answered, so I can't ask you for any further that. But could it be moved further from the boundaries of the neighbouring properties? And that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Okay. Would the agent, Ms. Ferguson, come forward, please? Thank you. And you've got 3 minutes and 30 seconds. I'll give you a warning.
Thank you, Chair and members, for the opportunity to speak. The application's before you following lengthy discussions with your officers to arrive at a scheme which the site can accommodate without harm. Significant efforts have been invested on all sides to ensure the development is right for the site and the wider area. this part of Malton is quite interesting because from main public views it's characterised by large houses, but there isn't really a strong form, and there are examples of buildings in the gardens of the properties surrounding St Andrew's Lodge to the north, for example, and two large double garages almost flush with the boundary of the application site, shown there on the pictures. In fact, the north elevation of this development will not be seen because of the position and proximity of these neighbouring garages. The proposed house is to accommodate the applicant's mother so that she can live close to her family and provide mutual support. Being single-storey with reduced height, widths and levels, its scale and proportions are more akin to an outbuilding or an annex, which one might typically expect in large grounds such as this. It's so far from the nearest houses, separation distances are easily met, that such a refusal on these grounds can't possibly be sustained. Control over future extensions, which we understand the objectors are concerned about, is proposed by your officers by way of a planning condition. The dwelling's been well designed in full consultation with the council's building conservation officer, and in any event, the dwelling would not be visible from any public views. Consequently, a refusal can't be sustained on the grounds of harm to the conservation area either. The trees proposed for removal are those of which are the lowest quality in the site and can be replaced with more appropriate species in the correct locations. Because of their low quality and very limited contribution to the conservation area, were the authority faced with a request to remove them, quite aside from this development, it's most unlikely it would choose to protect them with a tree preservation order. The Highway Authority similarly have raised no objections or concerns about traffic movements. We understand there's a strong fondness for this area by neighbours, and it's shared by my client. We also understand that change is not always wanted, but resistance to such change doesn't provide solid grounds for refusal of the planning application. In this case, the officer's carefully considered report sets out how this proposed development complies fully with the council's adopted development plan. So it's hoped that members are able to accept the officer's recommendation and support the application. Thank you.
Gary, do you need to come back?
Thank you. Just very briefly, Chairman, one of the points that I was going to respond to was in relation to extensions. And actually the agent beat me to the punch on that one, in the sense that Condition 4 does propose to remove what we would call permitted development rights from the building. So much has been said in the national press recently about large extensions, and we are intending to bring a report, Chairman, to clarify that, because there's been some interesting reporting that hasn't actually set out all the details. But the effect of this condition would be to remove extensions and give the council the control over any further additions, were any to be proposed. The other point that I think the first speaker raised was about possible movement of the dwelling on the plot from boundaries. And if members are able to look at page 53, you'll see that the building is sort of located in what I would term the sort of northern corner of the plot. And although it's relatively close to the boundaries, it isn't actually hard on the boundaries, but it's subsequently also been lowered on the site. And I think that means that the view, I've left this particular view on the screen, that the floor level of the proposed building would be below what we're looking at here by about a metre, which, as you appreciate, diminishes the impact of the building on the plot. It would be possible to move it, Chairman, but I feel as though that movement would be relatively arbitrary in the context of this, because this dwelling also needs to have its own amenity space, which would face southwest, as you might expect, into the sort of lighter area. So I think the answer to the point that was raised is yes, it could be moved, but I'm not sure of the sort of rationale now that we've reduced the level down in terms of its impact on the neighbouring property.
Members, for questions, Councillor Cleary.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. The agent referred to it as an annex for the applicant's mother. I haven't seen in the conditions anywhere where it suggests that the property should remain part of the property. Have I missed that?
I think whilst that might be the intention, it's being proposed as a two-bedroom dwelling, Chairman, and there wasn't any suggestion that it would be limited to an annex in the way of a condition.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that when we contemplate limiting the use of dwellings or residential buildings by way of a condition. There has to be a planning land use reason for it, and I think other than sharing the access into the site with the house, this functions as a self-contained unit. So whilst it might actually in the first instance be occupied by a relative or an elderly relative, in the fullness of time, the way this application has been pitched is as a separate dwelling in effect, so you or I could potentially buy it and occupy it independent of the house. So I think that's the situation in planning terms, that we're looking at it as an independent two-bedroom dwelling.
Thank you. Councillor Burr.
Thank you, Chairman. We've gone out to consultations from Highways North Yorkshire, and we often don't get great responses from them, and it says recommend conditions. Bearing this is on to the busy A64, could you just update us with what the recommended conditions are, please?
I think it was the old A64. It's now the 12, I'll say 1248, because I think it's the 1248, but I'll probably be corrected on that now. In terms of those responses, the conditions are set out on page 50 onwards, Chairman, in terms of the recommendations. I mean, clearly from the first photograph, you'll have noted that the entrance onto the road is actually quite a wide entrance in the open walkway there. So I don't think there's an issue there about intervisibility with a car emerging or a car entering the site. In terms of the conditions that are on the agenda, condition 5 talks about reference to related car parking and turning facilities being provided and maintained clear of any obstruction. So that's a requirement. There's also a requirement for an on-site compound for construction traffic, so that things aren't left haphazardly on the site and the site's kept in a tidy manner. And I think, Chairman, from a highway point of view, that's pretty much it. They haven't raised any highway safety issue in that. We are in, I think I'm correct, we're in the 30 at that point. We're in the 30 mile an hour at that point.
If I could just come back on that. Yes, you are right. The width of the driveway, I've noticed over the last few weeks that it has been extended and it has been made wider.
Councillor Possett, did you indicate? Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Can you just confirm what the two buildings are on the northwest boundary? I know you said that one of them was a garage, but the one at the immediate sort of northern point.
That's a garage.
Yeah.
When I looked over, I took them both to be garages, one to one of the properties that was on the frontage and the other one to be the property, the new, relatively new property that's been built in the early 2000s at the back. So there isn't a picture of that, but actually the new house is about 1.5 stories high behind that building.
Councillor Mason.
Just to clarify something, Mr. Tate said something, that it was another plan application that was approved last year for a building in close proximity, is that right?
I think the building that Mr. Tate Smith's referring to is behind the back of the existing main house. So if you look at the page 53, it's on the blue land. It's not on the application site, it's to the west of the proposed shared driveway. It's not shown on the drawing, to be fair, but it's in that area.
Councillor Thackeray.
Thank you. It's a general observation, in actual fact. Mr. Howardston kindly pointed out that there had been considerable amount of backland development over the years, which is as may be. But frankly, I don't see why there having been backland development that we need to go around spoiling every conceivable piece of land that exists tucked in behind really attractive houses. The expression robbing Peter to pay Paul comes into my mind. The amount of decimation, if you like, to the amenity value of the existing property, whichever one it is, the one outlined in blue, it seems to be left with a cricket pitch size garden for the sake of the land grab on the right. That's just my observation.
Yes, the point that Councillor Thackeray just made actually was a point that the case officer did take up with the applicant about the extent of the blue land. And on the late pages, the blue land actually it was enlarged to keep more of the back area to go with the house, the existing house, than was previously shown. So on the late pages, the red line slightly reduced for what goes with the new dwelling. Well, it's actually wider than it looks on there. It's such a large plot, I suppose. The point with regard to backland, Chairman, it is one that occasionally we've had to wrestle with as a committee, and it is a matter of judgment, ultimately. Some of the backland plots that we've had faced before us in the past have been on what I would call very small plots, on where you've got long, narrow, thin driveways where the noise and disturbance issues going in between and to the side and to the rear of houses becomes in itself an issue. I think that's probably not so much the case here because we're dealing with such a spacious form of development. But it is a judgment, Chairman. I think ultimately we can't get away from what we're looking at in terms of the character of the area. And so that's the sort of thing that we look at generally, whether it's in a conservation area or not, and it is in a conservation area. The view of the council previously and the most recent one at St Andrew's Lodge, which as you can see is just to the west of the northwest of the premises, which goes in between two quite substantial properties there, actually still kept quite a large amount of amenity space to the side and rear of both of those. And I think this council felt that that was acceptable in the relatively recent past. And I think, on balance, we think that's still the case for this particular plot. So it's a balanced recommendation, Chairman, but we think in the context of where we started with this and where we've ended up, we've now got a design that ticks all of the boxes for us. So hence the approval recommendation, Chairman.
Thank you. Councillor Hope.
Thank you, Chairman. Somebody mentioned we're going to lose some trees, and I think the quote is low quality trees. Do we know how many and what the low quality are?
The survey drawing on the agenda, Chairman, but if you can look at page, I'm not sure which page it is on the late pages, Chairman, page 5, 6, 7, 8 on the late pages. What you've got there is the location of the dwelling on the back of the plot, and you can see all of what I would call the substantial large trees that are adjacent to the driveway are all retained. It's only when you get into the depth of the plot that the smaller trees are proposed to be removed, because they actually sit on the stand on the site of where the dwelling would be proposed. So looking across here, you're looking at anything, all of this smaller stuff here is what comes out when you're on the site. So once you're clear of the slope, which is the front wall of the premises, then anything else isn't necessary to come out, but it's just on the footprint of where the L of the building sits. The response to that is one of we're proposing a landscaping condition for some replanting of appropriate trees and species on the plot to make up for that. But I suppose there's always a balance to be struck between what you plant and where it is in relation to the boundaries of neighbouring properties as well, because some of the existing trees adjacent to the driveway are absolutely enormous sort of forestry type trees, and I'm sure the neighbours wouldn't want us to be approving something of that sort of scale. But other, you know, sort of lighter birch species perhaps, or things of that nature might be appropriate in the way of alternatives to what's lost.
Yeah, I think what I was getting at, if my memory is not going too far wrong, there's some copper beech up that there, and I would hate to see some of them go.
suggesting that there shouldn't be an amenity, there isn't an amenity value, but it's a question of balancing up, you know, the loss of the tree with the development, plus any mitigation that would be sought through the planning conditions. So I think, you know, we've looked at this and haven't got any implicit objections to the loss of individual trees because of their value, but clearly there's a need to, we feel, compensate by a landscaping scheme to replace them with something else on the plot. Hmm.
Dare I mention a site visit?
Councillor Hubby, are you proposing that?
Go on then, yes I will. Thank you.
Can I go to Councillor Cleary, because he indicated, is that okay? Councillor Cleary.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, and due deference to local members. There's quite a lot of hard landscaping there. Was there any consultation with the Environment Agency in terms of runoff? Because the Ort Road does suffer from flooding.
There is no consultation with the Environment Agency nowadays on developments of this scale, Chairman. It's one of those things that if we send them things that they don't want, they send them straight back again. They've got quite a rigorous list of things that they wouldn't take. So they wouldn't take that as a consultation. They're no longer a consultee on individual dwellings.
Thank you. Briefly come back. I think if committee was going to accept this, I think I'd like to see some form of over and above the building regs to make sure that the planning committee has allowed for a little more attenuation for rainwater.
I think I understand your point. I think the issue that and it struck me when I was looking at the driveway whether there's a need for interception. But I would have thought if we were going to get that request, it would have come from the Highway Authority rather than necessarily a drainage body. Mm. But they haven't, at this stage, requested that, Chairman.
Councillor Burr.
Yes, thank you, Chairman. So for someone who's been on the Planning Committee for a while, it'll come of no surprise to you that I do have concerns that I regard as backland development. There's been a lot of questions asked, and obviously members are quite uneasy with this. And as our officer has pointed out to us, it is balanced. I've got more concerns relating to the development. It is in a beautiful area of Moulton. It is in a conservation area. And I am concerned about the height variations. And I don't think that sitting in this room we can actually appreciate. And I think that some of you would probably welcome a site visit. I think that you've got to remember that this particular dwelling, not so long ago, got permission to run a business from there. So we've got to take that into consideration. Also, as been pointed out by other members, we aren't privy to the other area of land that has already got the permission on, so we aren't seeing it in its totality. I'm not sure that the design complements the area, however that is something for debate. And Gary has pointed out that it's not the busy A64 and it has got a different name, but we all know it around here as the A64, and it is very, very busy, and it will be accumulating more and more traffic. It has been said tonight about the St Andrews buildings, which we did pass, and they are really, really good. However, they are not on the busy main road. They are up a slightly less busy road. And the St Andrews Lodge is not backland, it is front-facing. So I think because of all the questions that have been asked, because we can't actually get a real feel for the site and the land that does raise and it does fall, I think that I was going to propose a site visit, but thank you, you've already proposed one. I'm more than happy, and I hope members will support a site visit, so I'd like to second that.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded for a site visit. Would members please make a vote? Sorry, that's 9 votes for and 1 abstention, so we'll have a site visit. I'll arrange a date at the end of the meeting. So, can we move on to application number 9, which is 19/00017/F full. Land at OS Field number 0078 Main Street, Oswaldkirk, and it's for the erection of 2 banks of ground-based solar panels totalling 76 number panels.
Thank you, Chair. The application site is a section of agricultural field in the ownership of the old rectory in Oswaldkirk. The specific site is located approximately 90 metres to the southwest of the Grade 2 listed building. And I'm just highlighting the old rectory there. And in the foreground of the picture is the application site, which is the section of field. As has been mentioned, the application seeks approval for the erection of 2 banks of ground-based solar panels, totalling 76 in number. These would be in banks of 20 metres in length by 3 metres in depth, with a 7-metre gap between. The proposed application site is located approximately 10 metres to the south of Oswaldkirk's conservation area boundary. The site also falls within the Hawardian Hills area of outstanding natural beauty, and the B1363 runs north to south directly to the east of the site, which is at a distance of approximately 440 metres from the where the panels would be located. As you've had sight of in the officer's report, there's been a number of representations received, raising a variety of concerns, including concerns raised by the Parish Council. As concluded in the officer's report, the principle for the development of renewable energy generation equipment does align with policy, and as also noted in the officer's report, it's considered that this can be undertaken without harm to the setting of the village conservation area or harm to the setting of nearby listed buildings, which are detailed in the report. You can see here there's the Grade 2 listed church, the old rectory, and the Grade 2 star listed Oswaldkirk Hall to the northwest of the application site. A heritage statement was submitted in support of the application, and the Council's Conservation Officer and Historic England have now confirmed they've got no concerns in relation to heritage matters with the application. I'd also like to take the opportunity to point out that these are not permanent features in the landscape. A condition would be recommended for their removal after their lifetime has been completed. So the proposed panels, while quite significant in number for domestic installation, have been justified in the supporting information submitted by the applicant. And obviously they will contribute towards the generation of renewable energy. An options appraisal was undertaken in relation to various potential locations within the site, including on the roof slopes and in different areas under the ownership. However, the current location was considered to be most appropriate. And additionally, in terms of the number of panels proposed, it is noted that any surplus energy will be given back to the grid without any kind of profit being made by the applicant. So, as you can see, the application site is in the corner of the field, and there is some existing landscaping in this location. This photograph was taken at the towards the earlier part of the consideration of this application, and subsequently to that, some new planting has been undertaken by the applicant. And whilst this is appreciated, a revised landscaping scheme with some more kind of native indigenous tree species has been submitted, so this could be planted in the next available planting season, which will be from November onwards. It's also noted that the overall maximum height of the panels would be 2 metres, which would help to kind of limit any wider views of this. As we've noted, the most closely available public view of this location would be 440 metres to the east. So between that and some of the other structures on site, including these outbuildings here, it would help to kind of limit it appearing incongruous in this location. It's also noted there's a condition to ensure that the panels are non-reflective to help limit any further incongruous views. It's considered that the panels were located at a sufficient distance so it wouldn't result in any harm upon the impact of amenity of neighbouring properties, and there's no significant noise impacts associated with this type of development. And whilst there might be some visibility of panels from the neighbouring property, at certain points the landscaping is noted, and as we know from private properties there is no planning right to a view that can be afforded in that instance. So I would also note that North Yorkshire Archaeology have confirmed no objection to the proposal, and it's not considered that it would result in any harm to the significance of the area of outstanding natural beauty due to the scale and positioning. Therefore, whilst the concerns of neighbouring residents and the parish council have been noted and have been acknowledged and fully explored in the report, this proposal is considered to accord with local and national policy. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. We do have a speaker this evening, Mr. Reeves, who is the applicant. If you'd like to step forward, Mr. Reeves, you've got 3 minutes. I will advise you when you're at 30 seconds. Thank you.
Sorry, I'll just keep this very short. I submitted this application with the goal of trying to reduce our resource usage and not to fall out with any neighbours or parish council. Whilst I understand their concerns, specifically from the immediate neighbours, in my opinion, the proposed planting will adequately hide the panels and no properties will be adversely affected in the long term. Several sites were considered in the planning stages and all have drawbacks that affect different neighbours in different ways. On balance, I feel that this is the most suitable location, and the alternative is to simply leave the problem to someone else in a different area. Whilst with the UK Parliament recently declaring a national climate emergency, it is clear that more than ever that it is everyone's responsibility to do a little bit to help reduce their carbon emissions. The solar panels are part of a wider plan to eliminate the old building's dependence on fossil fuels, both for heating and electric, and help to ensure its continued existence as a habitable home. Thank you.
Thank you. Members, any questions for officers, please? Councillor Burr.
Thank you. It was just about the removal when the solar panels are past their use. Roughly, how long is this? I'm not quite sure.
If I could. 30 years.
It's generally, I believe, in between kind of 20, 25 years is kind of expected lifetime. Thank you.
If there are no other questions, we'll move into debate. I think the nearest local member is Councillor Thackeray.
Struggling with different thoughts on this. And the starting point not being negative towards the principle, which I think is completely and utterly sound and sane, and I think it's possible that we as a society have got some obstacles to overcome in our heads as to how we go from heavy fossil fuel usage through to more sustainable forms of heating, etc. Because we don't like things that are in front of our living room window very much. I have some questions, but whether or not they're appropriate to tonight, I don't know. I went to Germany about 15 years ago, and a chap took me to his house which had solar panels on the roof and a ground source heat pump, and he told me his electricity bill for the year was €300. I don't know whether ground source heat pump is something that has been considered in this situation, and I doubt if it's my place to ask. However, that is an unobtrusive method. There's air source heat pump here. I don't know enough about the technology, and I'm afraid, whilst I appreciate the applicant's attempted to be as thorough as possible, it certainly, at short notice, it is blinding me with science. The principle, I understand that there's no right to a view, and therefore, if people's main concerns is the view, which I glean from everything that I have read, that is the case, not the principle of the application, then I wonder how much work could go into mitigating that that obstacle, if you like, and that level of upset that other people obviously feel. I did take the liberty today to speak to an installer of solar panels, just to ask about the way in which they could, depending on the topography and whether or not the ground falls away, whether the ground could be dug out slightly and the panels lowered so that they could be looked over the top a little bit, like the method of creating and living with a ha-ha, which may sound funny, but it's... yeah, you know what I mean. Whether that's possible on this site, I've no idea, because I've never been on the site itself. And again, what was mentioned earlier about the level of planting, the amount of different species that could be grown, which may do it. And I don't know whether or not whether the objectors are considering the view from a vantage point, or a view from ground level, or what. I would need to go and have a look to make to give a definitive answer. But anyway, those are my thoughts. I appreciate I'm the local new boy. I think it's a great idea, but I wonder what there is in the mix, in the offing, to be able to lessen the blow for other people. Thank you.
I'm going to ask the Chief Planning Officer to come back with regard to views.
Just to clarify, really, for the point you've raised, Councillor Thackeray, was in the context of the difference, if you like, between the right to a private view as opposed to planning in the public interest and a public view of something. And so, in that sense, it's one of those material consideration questions, in the sense of a private view is not a material consideration that we could take into account. And on page 87, if members could just look at that, what you get a feel for there is the distance from any public viewpoints of the parcel of land, and I think what really isn't showing on the photographs today is the hedgerows, which are quite substantial. The ones that you're looking at there are actually not in leaf, and now they are. And I did actually go to Oswald Kirk last Thursday myself, and now that the hedgerows are in leaf, they're actually really substantial. So that's the worst case that you're looking at. I think in terms of the private view, it's always one of those things that we get comments about, and I think the private views in the main are those coming from occupiers and owners of properties in the main of the village looking southwards. And in general terms, I think it's fair to say that they're at a slightly higher level in the landform. But you're actually looking at the backs of the angles of the panels, and so you're not looking at the faces, which tend to be the ones that you can sometimes spot if you happen to see something if there's a reflective glare off them. But the height of the panels is generally lower than the level of the hedgerows, so the existing hedgerows are doing that job. I think when you think of the landscaping that's been proposed here to augment that, I think in terms of even the private views, that's really getting to a point where I think the impact is very, very limited indeed. I think the final point, I think Niamh might have mentioned it, that the surfaces of the panels are also the non-reflective type. So even if we haven't spotted a viewpoint, you know, who knows what's across the other side of the valley. These things shouldn't be shining in a sunny situation. So when you balance all that lot out against, well, actually, here's somebody who owns a grade two, maybe two star, I'm not sure which one, a grade two listed building with single glazing, his approach to conservation is not to try and double or triple glaze the building, but keep the historic interest of the building and make it wash its face by generating its own electricity on land that he owns. So I think the balance we've gone for is to support the application. So that's really where we are, Jim.
Councillor Windrus.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chairman. It used to be my patch at one point. As Gary says, you can't have it always. It's a listed building, single glazing. This is a renewable energy. As you can see from that picture there, there's other buildings with solar panels on, so as far as I can see, there isn't a problem with it, and I'll move approval. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Windrus. Councillor Potter.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Yeah, I've noted the objections, but it probably comes as no surprise that I know this area as well as I know every area, and I know the viewpoints. I know where the roads and tracks are, and I think every effort's been made to make sure that this has got the minimal impact that's possible. So I'll don my climate change champion's hat and say, how are we going to generate our energy requirements without destroying our climate and ourselves when we must urgently stop carbon and methane emissions? Nuclear is hugely expensive and leaves a legacy of currently untreatable waste for thousands of years. So at what point are we going to start taking this issue seriously instead of navel-gazing over Brexit and party leaders? So the applicant has clearly made an effort to address a vital issue that the government appear unable or unwilling to address, and at the same time minimising the impact on the village and its amenity. I also note that we're benefiting from some additional tree planting here, which wouldn't have been there otherwise. There's quite clearly support from national policy. If we look on page 79 at the section 14 of the NPPF up near the top, meeting the challenge of climate change, etc., etc., I'm sure everybody's read that in great detail. The CPRE support this sort of development. And I've said it before, but without a few mavericks saying, I can do something different instead of just connecting to the gas supply or the oil supply, we're not moving anywhere. So I can quite wholeheartedly second support for this application. Thank you.
Councillor Cleary.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Yes, a little more briefly than my friend across the way, but in planning terms, the negative aspects of this have to be outweighed by the positive aspects of this, and I think the positive aspects of this application do outweigh the negative aspects. I think the applicant has done, as Councillor Potter has already alluded to, attempted to think about where to go, where to put this array, how to shield it from the nearby views with tree planting, which I know is going to be enhanced. Going on to the climate change conundrum, we've already asked about the lifespan of these solar panels. Just a quick message, I've yet to understand how these things are recycled at the end of the life. I gather they are rather dirty things themselves in their makeup. However, in terms of the planning matter at hand, I'm happy to support this application.
Councillor Mason.
I can briefly answer that question for you. I asked that question of someone who fits solar panels, and I believe 95% of them are recyclable now. So they can be recycled back into solar panels again for use again in the next 20 years.
Right, if I'm correct, it's been moved and seconded for approval. Will members now please vote? Thank you, members. That's unanimous. It's approved. We move on to item 10, which is application number 19/00274/House, and it's 3 Chapel Close, Helmsley, and it's an extension, the erection of an extension to a garage first floor extension above the garage and a single storey rear extension. There are two speakers for this.
Thank you, Chair. Item number 10 is on page 135 of the agenda. I'll just run through a number of slides showing the application site and surrounding area. To kick off, we've got the aerial photo, and the application site is number 3, Chapel Close, which is on the southern side of the cul-de-sac. This area of residential development dates from the mid to late 1990s. Castleview Estate comprises Chapel Close, Allenby Road and Crosland Close. The development is fairly uniform in layout. You can see there's a sort of staggered layout between the application site and its neighbours. As referred to in the report, concerns have been raised by the neighbour at number 5 in terms of overshadowing and loss of light, which I'll come on to. The site is within development limits. It's also partly within flood zone 2. And just also to highlight the presence of significant dense row of planting, which again is referred to in the report, that lines the former railway line to the east of the application site. So just moving on to photos of the property itself. This is facing towards the north-facing elevation, where the main first floor extension would be, and also where the garage would be stepped forward within the driveway. It's quite a long driveway for all of these properties along the cul-de-sac. Comments have been raised about potentially it being out of character and out of proportion in terms of the existing buildings within the cul-de-sac. Again, just to highlight the proximity of the western elevation of the application site, number 3 to number 5, and also the window, the next photo, that's the window of concern in terms of loss of light and overshadowing from the first floor extension to the front. Again, there's also comments raised in relation to the impact on the bay window. So this photo's taken, it's just panned around a bit further, and the garage, as a result of the first floor extension, would be moved forward, reconstructed further forward within the drive, and the line of the garage would be roughly in that area there. So it would be approximately 300 millimetres in front of the bay window, the line of the bay window. Again, this photo just shows the side window. The distance between the two properties wall to wall is 2.5 metres. Again, facing north, just showing the separation distance. The actual first floor extension would terminate in front of that window, so it wouldn't actually be a case that that window's facing onto a blank elevation. Although view isn't a material consideration, it is considered that the overshadowing is not significant as a result of the proposed extension. So moving to the rear of the property, there's also the single-storey extension that would replace the existing conservatory. It would be similar dimensions in terms of its projection off the rear elevation of the property, and it would actually be lower in terms of its overall height. It would span 7 metres across the rear elevation of the property. As referred to in the report, the extension to the rear, there is a fallback position for the applicant in that that extension in its own right could be constructed under permitted development rights. So just panning round in the garden area, just to show the existing south-facing elevation, the boundary treatment with number 1 to the east, the southern boundary beyond which is the old station buildings. And I'll just take it back to the aerial photo. So in terms of the report, there's no updates to the report as published. Concerns have been raised by neighbours in relation to the proportions and impact on the character of the area. The first floor extension would be sympathetic to the existing dwelling in terms of its form, proportions and it would not unduly depart from the existing uniformity in terms of appearance and scale of properties within the cul-de-sac. On page 143 of the agenda is a series of visualisations which do give a good indication of how the extension would appear to the front in terms of its impact on the street scene. The extensions to the front and rear would not depart from the existing staggered layout of properties, nor break from the building line or form or arrangement of dwellings within the cul-de-sac. The external construction materials are considered appropriate and would not detract from the character of the property or have an adverse impact on the street scene. Concerns have also been raised in relation to the impact on neighbouring properties and the levels of amenity currently enjoyed, particularly the owner of number 5 to the west and the loss of light and overshadowing to the side window. Given the position of the two properties in relation to one another, the size of those properties and also the mature tall planting to the east, there is already an existing level of overshadowing and loss of light during the summer months as a result of the two-storey property. The extent of the first floor forward projection would terminate approximately level with the window frame of that side window, and overall, whilst there may be a degree of shadowing, it is considered that the extension would not give rise to a material adverse impact on levels of daylight reaching the first floor side window or the ground floor bay window. The existing arrangement of windows allows for views between bedroom windows. This has been flagged up by the applicant. The extension to the at the front, the first floor extension, would have principal windows that face northward, as is the case for number 5. As a result, there's also potential improvements in terms of privacy, levels of privacy enjoyed between the two properties. In conclusion, the proposed extensions can be accommodated by the host dwelling without having an unacceptable impact on the appearance of the street frontage or the character and form of residential development within the estate. There would be no material harm to existing levels of amenity and no adverse highways impact. It is therefore recommended that planning permission is granted subject to the four conditions as listed in the report.
Thank you very much, Chairman. We have two speakers. Can I ask the objector, Julie Hassan, to come forward, please? Thank you. If you press the button at the bottom in the middle, you've got 3 minutes. I will give you a call when it gets to 30 seconds left.
I'm here representing the neighbours who live on Chapel Close, but primarily my mum and dad, whose house number 5 is. I've read the report and I've come along tonight because I want to raise a couple of issues really from it. The report says that the bedroom extension will overlap the brickwork of the window on the side of the house by 85 millimetres. And whilst I appreciate that this means that we wouldn't be looking out onto a brick wall, I think it would impact greatly on the feeling of living in a detached residence. A note, the report states that the properties will remain 2.5 metres apart, but if you look out and you're faced with the outside wall of next door directly in your eye line, I think the feeling will be of one of very, very close proximity to your neighbour. And this applies to the lounge as well. If you look at the lounge bay window and then take in the fact that there will be a loss of light, that, I think, leads to the house feeling almost more as if you're living in a semi-detached residence now as opposed to the detached residence. The report also states that there'll be improved privacy. Well, I disagree. I think the neighbours are going to feel sort of very much closer to us than they did previously, and that actually, to me, would lead more to a loss of privacy. Looking at the measurements that are involved in this, which I appreciate can be sort of quite small, I would ask that perhaps the committee could consider asking for the plans just to be altered to move the front line of the extension upstairs backwards by maybe about half a metre and the downstairs maybe by about a metre, which actually would then address our concerns entirely.
Thank you.
Thank you. Can I ask the applicant, Mr. Cuddy, to step forward, please? Oh, sorry.
Agent. Yes.
Thank you. Sorry.
It's all right. I'll try to be as brief as possible. There were a number of objections registered covering the same point, points, and I'd like to address these first. Restricted covenants were mentioned in a number of objections. These are obviously land law matters and not for consideration tonight. The amenity objections, I understand the neighbour and the other neighbouring properties have raised the objections that there will be a loss of light and a loss of privacy. The existing position, the position of the existing windows allows a view directly from number 3 into the bedroom of number 5 as it stands at the moment. It's not quite clear on there, but there is a bedroom window above the ridge of the garage towards the front, and if you look obliquely out of that window, you can directly see into the bedroom of number 5. The principal window for number 5's bedroom is on the north elevation, which is obviously at the frontage. The proposal is not to project in front of the side window by a significant amount. It does project slightly. Most of that is taken up by the window frame, which is highlighted in the report. The estate does consist of two-storey detached brick houses with pantile roofs, and there are a small number of house types within there. The predominant layout of the house is the same that my client's is. There are about 10 properties. There are variations throughout the site created with positions of utility rooms and garages. And there is a house type which has a gable fronting the main street, which is the principle for this front extension. And in conjunction with the materials and the lower ridge height of the extension, and the window patterns, the gable sits comfortably within the overall feeling of the estate. The rear extension is a very simple form, but allows the kitchen, dining, family space to open out into the garden. And
30 seconds.
Thank you. And that just about brings me to the end, so thank you for your time.
You want to come back?
Yeah, thank you, Chair. In terms of the plans that accompany the report, there's a plan, members maybe actually looking at as we speak, but on page 142, the proposed plans, there is a plan that shows the first floor in relation to number 5. And if you zoom in on that plan, you can see where the first floor extension extends forward in relation to the chimney breast on the eastern elevation of number 5. And actually within that, on that plan, there is actually the window is actually shown as an indentation. So the overlap across the window is limited just to the frame of the window. And the comments made in terms of a feeling of sort of an overbearing impact, the separation distance between the two properties is unchanged. So there is no physical encroachment sideways as a result of the extension. So it does remain at a 2.5 metre separation between those properties.
I'll throw it open to questions to members, please. If there are no questions, I'll go to the Councillor Windress.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Our officers are happy with that the scale of this extension is acceptable. I don't think that any overshadowing on the neighbouring property will be significant. I mean, there is a covenant in there, but that's not a planning issue, so I'll just move approval. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Councillor Burr.
Thank you, Chairman. Yes, I do tend to agree with the local member. I think after scrutiny of these plans, I don't actually think it will be detrimental. I listened very carefully to the objector, and then obviously our officer backed that up with significant evidence, and I do think on balance that it would be okay. And I do think personally that the extension to the rear is actually an enhancement to the actual building. So I would second approval.
Thank you, Councillor Burr. It's been moved and seconded for approval. Members, please vote. Sorry, members. 9 votes for, 1 abstention, so it's approved. Thank you. At this point, I'm going to take myself out of the chair and ask Councillor Windrus to come in because I have a pecuniary interest in the next item and I need to leave the room.
Thank you. Agenda item 11 is application number is 19/00311/full. It's a full application at Oxfield Farm, Low Lane, Howsham.
Thank you, Chair. Item number 11 is on page 145 of the agenda. It relates to a planning application for the erection of a stable block. So just to run through photos of the site surrounding area, this aerial photo highlights the position of the proposed stables in relation to the applicant's property at Oxfield Farm, which is highlighted there. The nearest neighbours are further to the east. The site is within the open countryside. It's also within an area that's locally designated for its high landscape value. The general topography of the area is undulating. Land falls away to the north and then rises as it meets Low Lane, so there are views across the fields towards the application site. So the proposed stables would be positioned within an existing grass paddock to the west of the property. So this photo is facing towards the gates which would be used to access the paddock, or which are used to access the paddock. So panning round eastward, this is facing towards the western gable of the applicant's property. Panning round southward, just showing the boundary treatment of the paddock, post and rail fencing. And this is facing towards the corner of the field where the stable block would be constructed. So the stable block would comprise 4 stables. The building is an L-shaped building. And in terms of its landscape impact, as I pan round sort of northward, you can see how the land falls away and then rises as it meets Low Lane along here. So in terms of lowering the building within the landscape, negotiations have taken place with the architect to ensure a level of cut and fill to drop the ridgeline of the building to ensure it's not prominent within the landscape. So this photo is taken facing southward from the track that leads to Oxfield Farm, and I'll just show the stables will be positioned roughly in that area, behind the trees. And finally, this photo is taken from Low Lane, again facing back towards the application site, which would be behind that tree. So moving to the report itself, there's no updates to the report as published. In terms of the design and landscape impact, the application site is within an undulating landscape, and the stables would be positioned on higher ground within the application site. It's considered that the proposed materials and also the modest scale of the building are in keeping with the rural surroundings. The application has been amended to ensure a reduction in the height of the ridge line in relation to existing ground levels, and at the eastern gable this would result in a reduction of approximately 800 millimetres. The finish levels would be achieved by cut and fill, and that would lower the overall ridge line, as shown on the plans on page 151 of the agenda. In terms of the impact on local amenity, there are no sensitive receptors in close proximity to the application site. There is a public right-of-way, but that is some distance to the west of the site. The stables would be for private use, and there's no anticipated issues in terms of traffic movements, pollution or disturbance. There are no objections from any consultees or members of the public. In conclusion, the building, in terms of its siting scale, form and appearance, would not be visually intrusive or inappropriate when viewed in the rural countryside context. There would be no material harm to the landscape character of the area, and the use of the building would not give rise to any adverse amenity impact. It is therefore recommended that planning permission is granted, subject to the three conditions as listed at the end of the report.
Thank you. Are there any questions for the officer? Nope. Okay, we'll move into debate, and I think Councillor Cleary, this is your patch.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chairman. I am one of the local members present. Thank you to the officer for a very comprehensive report. You've said everything I was going to say. I will highlight some of the items. The only views will of the very modest, low-profile development will be from a long, long way away and set against a substantial existing steading. The use fits in well with our rural use requirements in the local plan. Given the aforementioned and the fact that the only reason it comes before committee is the connection with a member of the committee, I move approval.
Thank you. Councillor Mrs. Burr.
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you very much for your comprehensive report. I think it tells us absolutely everything that we need to know. Again, a beautiful area, lovely place to have horses. Really, what could be better? So I would like to second that. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else wishing to speak? Okay, it's been moved and seconded for approval, so I'll put that to the vote, please. Thank you. That's unanimous.
Thank you, Councillor Windrus. Members, if we can go to item 12 on the agenda, which is 19/00340/full. It is a Tilly's Tail Dog Grooming. It's the erection of a detached building for use as a dog grooming parlour in Norton. There is a speaker who actually was late, but I will allow him to speak once the officers have presented the case. Thank you, members.
Thank you, Chair. Item number 12 is on page 154 of the agenda. The first slide shows the aerial photo of the application site and surrounding area. It's an area of modern residential development that's been quite densely developed. The application site is land to the rear of number 22. And the objections that have been received are from number 24 and also 2A and 2B Juniper Drive. So the application site is within the town development limits. It's also within a cul-de-sac and it forms part of a terrace of four properties. There is visitor parking that's unallocated to the front of the property and a dedicated parking space within a courtyard to the west of the property. You'll also note the close proximity of the rear gardens of the properties that stand back to back. There's also a shared walkway which leads from the car park that provides access to the gardens of numbers 21, 22 and 23, Camellia Close. So this photo is showing the, this is on the southern side of the properties, and this shows the visitor parking that's unallocated off the cul-de-sac. This is round on the western side of the site, facing into the courtyard, where there is allocated parking for each of the properties, and it also faces towards Juniper Drive. This is looking eastward within the car park, and that is the parking space for the applicant, and this also shows the walkway that leads from the car park to the rear gardens. Photo taken facing east along that footpath. Members will note the boundary treatments are quite substantial in terms of the height and the finish. It's 2 metres roughly in height. So these photos are taken within the rear garden, facing towards the back of the house. Small gardens, approximately 35 square metres in area, and this is panning round to the east and then northward, and that shows the existing shed which would make way for the grooming parlour. In terms of its overall dimensions, not too dissimilar, and the building itself, if it was for uses incidental to the dwelling house, would be permitted development. So what members are considering is the change of use, or the use of that building. On that photo, there's also the access gate that leads to the walkway shown on previous photos. And just panning around to the west, just showing the enclosure of the garden. So moving to the report itself, there are objections from local residents, and the main concerns relate to noise disturbance, the impact of traffic in terms of parking provision, and also road safety for users of the cul-de-sac, and also concerns about odour. Just to start with the highways issues, there are dedicated parking spaces within the courtyard, as shown on the photos, and also unallocated visitor parking to the front of the property. The applicant has confirmed that they will encourage drop-off and collection by customers of their dogs. As suggested by the highways officer, a condition has been recommended, condition number 5 on the report, that requires that a space is kept available during the operating hours. The highways officer also notes that the number of appointments would be limited by condition and is therefore satisfied in terms of granting a temporary permission. In terms of the concerns on residential amenity grounds, the application site is within a relatively dense residential area where rear gardens stand back to back. The Town Council have recommended refusal. They have been made aware of the conditions that would apply to any permission granted, but maintain the position of recommending refusal on the basis of the proposal being inappropriate within a residential area. The applicant has proposed limitations in terms of the operation of the business that reflected in the recommended conditions. Those conditions have been agreed with the Environmental Health Officer. Those conditions relate to restrictions on hours of operation, numbers of appointments, and it should limit the business to a relatively small-scale, single-person venture. Also, the hours of operation would ensure there's no impact on early mornings, evenings or weekends. The recommended conditions are considered reasonable, enforceable and necessary, and they include a requirement for the operator to keep a diary of bookings. National Planning Practice Guidance advises that it is appropriate for the local planning authority to grant a temporary permission when a trial run is deemed necessary in order to assess the impact of the development on the area. It is the officer's view that in this case, it is the day-to-day management and operation of the business by the applicant in a manner that respects the surrounding occupants that is central to mitigating the potential adverse impacts of the use on the neighbours. In light of this, it's considered prudent to limit the permission granted to a temporary 3-year period to act as a trial run to assess the effect of the development over that time. In conclusion, the proposed business use in this residential area has the potential to give rise to materially harmful impacts on residential amenity and highway safety. But taking account of the above aforementioned considerations and the site-specific circumstances and the consultation responses from the Highways and Environmental Health Officers, it's considered reasonable and appropriate to limit any grant of permission to a temporary period. The temporary period would give the applicant the opportunity to demonstrate that the home business can be operated in a way that would not harm residential amenity. It is therefore recommended that temporary planning permission is granted subject to the 5 conditions as listed in the report.
Thank you very much. We have a speaker, Mr. Simpkins. If you would like to come forward, Mr. Simpkins, you've got 3 minutes. If you press the button at the bottom of the pad in the middle, I'll give you a heads up at 30 seconds. Thank you.
Good evening. I am Tony Simpkins and I represent the applicant, Catherine Simpkins. The business being considered is just a personal one, giving dogs a bath and a haircut in a purpose-built, high-quality building at the end of the garden. It is not a major industrial undertaking. Local customers can walk their dogs in, others will use their own personal vehicles, no more than 4 a day, and that's only if the business proves to be successful. There will be no ad hoc callers, because it was always Catherine's desire that all work would be via pre-booked appointments only. It will only take a few seconds to walk the dogs quietly to the garden building, where they will be washed and groomed, typically taking about 1 to 2 hours. So we believe objectors' concerns about noise and odour are unfounded. The occasional bark from a dog will be heavily muted by the building's soundproofing, and any dog that barked for an extended period of time would simply not be allowed back. Some objectors are concerned about traffic and road safety. It will be made clear to first-time customers that the housing estate has a 20-mile-an-hour speed limit, and they will be made aware of the children's play area nearby. They will be provided with a map and clear directions, thus minimising the risk of them being distracted whilst locating the address for the first time. One objector was concerned that the odour from the new dogs would drive all the neighbouring dogs crazy and make them all bark. However, as most responsible dog owners train their dogs not to react adversely in such situations, we believe that this will not be a material issue. And as already stated, if a particular dog appears to be causing a big problem, Catherine will not allow them back. Hence, we are confident that the effect of this business on the surrounding neighbourhood will be almost imperceptible. In fact, this has already been the case for the last 18 months, during which time Catherine's address has been licensed by the council for dog boarding. Dogs stay at the address for days to weeks at a time, not just a couple of hours, as they will be for grooming. As far as we know, there have been no ill effects from this regarding residential amenity, and certainly no complaints. After realising this herself, one of the original objectors actually withdrawn her objection. Finally, given the statements we have just made, we believe a trial period is actually unnecessary. However, if the committee still thinks further evidence is required to prove minimal adverse impact on the local area, can we respectfully request that the committee considers a shorter trial period of, say, 18 months? If this is still a sufficient period for assessment, it will enable Catherine to settle into a permanent routine and make long-term plans sooner rather than later. Thank you.
Thank you. Open it to for members' questions to officers. No questions, I'll move it into debate. And I think, Councillor McKenzie, this is probably your ward.
Thank you, Chairman, and thank you for a very comprehensive report. I was present when Norton Town Council raised the objection, but I've sat here tonight and listened to all the facts. I've listened to what the officers had to say, and I think, in all honesty, I no longer object to it. I think it's perfectly reasonable. I would add that they're keeping this log, this diary, and there should be some sort of way to check that from time to time. That's something that perhaps the local councillor could do, and I'd be quite happy to do that, if that would be acceptable. Thank you.
Councillor Burr.
Sorry, I recommend approval.
Councillor Burr.
Thank you, Chairman. I find personally that this is quite a difficult one. And clearly I want to support Catherine and I want to support small businesses. However, I've got some worries about the location. I know this area very, very well, and it is one of our very, very high density building estates. And we do have problems of many, many cars parking on the pavements, and it is something that is so disappointing when we've got a nice estate and this is happening, but it's inevitable when more people have got cars, etc., etc. I really don't like to go against our officers, but I think that would we be setting a precedent if we actually allow this? At first I thought maybe I could support it, but then I thought, well, the drop-off and the collection can't be policed, and we've already got quite a lot of problems with cars. The space that's going to be made available, that can't always be policed. So what if there's a car in that, you know, the cars will be building up. And the appointments page, that can't really be policed. I know our councillor said that he would help look at that, but you know, it's very, very difficult to actually police an appointment page. I think Norton Town Council probably are right with this one. And I think that as a council, we don't want to be going against small businesses, but what we have to do is, if me personally, if I can't support this, I would have to try and think of other ways that we could support small businesses. And probably what we should be thinking about doing is thinking how to attract small business, one-man businesses, with say, like, redundant containers that you can go in, you can open up your container and you can have a small little business and you can go away. And I've seen this promoted and done in other districts, and maybe we should be creative and do that. But I think 3 years is far too long if you as a committee, if you do propose it. I just think that on a busy housing estate, I've got a dog and my dog barks, and I think it's a good dog and it barks, and I just don't think it's really the right environment, and I so do want to support this. So unfortunately I can't second you, and I'm sorry about that.
Thank you. Councillor Sakura.
I share Lindsay's concerns to an extent, but I don't want to pour cold water on a young person's desire to make a go of a small business, which may lead to a slightly bigger business. Either way, it's to earn a living. I can imagine the fear of people round and about for the potential noise from dogs, because I would feel exactly the same way myself. However, I would feel more comfortable to trust the applicant and and hope that it all works out okay, but take a slightly more cautious approach than the, perhaps the officer recommends, and reduce the temporary period to 12 months, because I think within a 12-month period, or even within a 12-week period, if just for the sake of argument, it will become very apparent very quickly if there is a large amount of disturbance to other people. So I would personally propose approving the application, but with a 12-month trial period.
Councillor Mason.
I echo Lindsay's concerns and Simon's concerns, but I actually would like to second Simon's motion there, because I think 12 months is an adequate time, because I think if you're trying to build a new business like this, you need to be able to forward plan. And I think 12 months is a short enough time period to ascertain what the business is actually doing and what impact it will have, but it gives them a chance to plan forward and move on.
Councillor Potter.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I would like to support somebody who is trying to get an income stream, as in getting a small business up and running. Concerns have been expressed about how we will police this sort of thing. And as you've heard me say before, the local residents will police this. And I think that the conditions that have been put in place are very sensible. The fact that the shed is soundproofed, which I hope would be sufficient to kill the sound of dogs barking, it doesn't quite get around the fact that there will be other dogs in the area that will be barking too. So, yeah. So whether they're going to be soundproof or not, I don't know. But I think the conditions that have been put on this are quite sensible. I'm quite happy with either 12 months or 18 months as the applicant suggested, but as it's been already moved for a 12-month, I'm quite happy to support that. But I certainly feel that the surrounding residents who've already put in a complaint are certainly going to complain if there are any smells or too much barking or any problems with car parking and so on. I think the conditions are quite reasonable with the amount of business that they're going to accept, as in four a day and very much limited to the times a day. So I think this is perfectly sensible and will be policed, and I can certainly support it. Thank you.
If I can make a comment from the Chair. I'm very encouraging of new starter businesses. I am aware that most starter businesses need between 12 and 18 months to prove viability, and I don't know how members feel about an 18-month period instead of a 12-month period. It is a temporary permission. It gives them time to establish whether this business is going to go, and if it's not, then it goes and the cabin can remain, and it changes its use back just to a cabin in the garden. So I'm open to what members feel. I'm just mindful that most businesses need between 12 and 18 months to establish themselves. Councillor Potter.
Yeah, I'm quite happy to move 18 months.
Councillor McKenzie.
I'm quite happy to second that.
If members are happy with that, I'm going to, I think it's been moved and seconded, with an amendment to the period of time to 18 months. And if we can vote on that, that would be very helpful. Thank you, members.
Chairman, isn't the two moved and seconded? And don't you have to do the first one first and the second one second?
Yeah, I'm happy to move for 18 months as well and withdraw my second on Simon's.
Can we clarify now that it's been moved and seconded with an amendment for an 18-month temporary approval, and can we take a vote on that? Sorry, Lindsay. That's 9 votes for, 1 abstention. It's temporarily approved for 18 months. Thank you, members. If we can move to item 13 on the agenda, which is application number 19/00418/73A. It is a variation of condition 2 of a previous approval, 18/00009 house, dated the 22nd of February, and it's to replace a drawing. And it's for Churchview, Sherburn, Moulton. Neve, thank you.
Thank you, Chair. For Churchview is a semi-detached dwelling located within the village of Sherburn. It falls within the village development limits and also within an archaeologically sensitive area. As the Chair has indicated, this application seeks approval for the variation of Condition 2 of the recently approved scheme in 2018 for a single-storey side extension to the property. As you can see from the photograph above, this has commenced construction. It has become apparent during the construction phase that the roof proportions and position of the new windows in the principal and rear elevation haven't been constructed in accordance with the approved plans, so that's the reason why this section 73 has been submitted. All works have stopped on site pending the outcome of this application, and it is noted and detailed within the officer's report that this proposed development is for a child with disabilities to provide accessible ground floor living and bathroom accommodation. So the footprint of the proposed extension and its positioning within the plot remain consistent with what was previously approved. However, the following alterations to the approved plans have been made. The proposal now incorporates a ridge height where it meets the original dwelling of 4.8 metres, whereas the previously approved ridge height was 4 metres. So it's presenting a steeper pitch and increased roof proportions. The windows at the extension at ground floor level have been set at 800 millimetres above ground level, whereas the existing windows are 700 millimetres above ground level. And the plans indicate that an existing window at first floor level within the original host property will be blocked up. This will be treated with match and render, so it wouldn't appear incongruous in the street scene. So we have received a letter of support and a letter of objection in the consideration of this application. The letter of objection comes from the occupier of number 6 Churchview in Sherburn, which is the property just to the side of where the extension is located. The concerns raised are in relation to the overall appearance of how the extension has now been built and the street scene impacts that this is considered to have as a result. It's officer's opinion that whilst this extension has been completed, and whenever it will be completed, it will be larger than originally approved, it's not considered that this is going to materially detract from the character of the dwelling. It was found that the steeper pitch would actually allow structurally for the use of concrete tiles that would match the tiles of the original host dwelling. A lower pitch would have necessitated the use of lightweight tiles, which can have some visual impacts on a street scene, particularly at ground floor level, in what is a particularly kind of open, almost on the corner building. So we have been able to recommend a condition that the roof tiles match those of the host dwelling. Furthermore, it's considered that the extension would remain subservient to the host dwelling, and it is noted that along Churchview there are a variety of extensions of different forms, different roof pitches, so it's not considered that this would have specific street scene harms. The minor alterations to the fenestrations also considered acceptable. I think this was for building regulation requirements, but it's not something that would be particularly visible within the street scene. Therefore, to conclude, it's not considered that the development would create a materially adverse impact upon neighbouring occupiers. You can see from the photographs that quite a distance remains between the sidewall of the extension and the nearest part of the neighbouring dwelling, so there'd be no loss of privacy or no loss of light by virtue of overshadowing. So it's therefore recommended that the approval is granted for the replacement of the approved plans condition. Thank you, Chair.
I have a question. It's just why the windows at a different height? Because that seems to be what's throwing the eye off completely, is the fact the window, when if you look at the picture there, there seems to be an addition of the breeze blocks of about 100 mil. I'm not quite sure why the windows are a different height.
Thank you. Yeah, it was my understanding that it was a building regulations issue, but that was actually not one of the points raised in the letter of objection. The letter of objection had kind of noted that that was the aspect that they were satisfied with.
Well, on the plan on the agenda, Councillor Mason, I think the top is level, but it's the sill that is marginally on the plan as it will be finished. I think it's just the picture, I think. Yeah.
Any other questions? And I'll throw it open to debate. There is no local member to take this one, so I'll let members lead. Councillor Burke.
No problems at all. Move approval.
Mr. Cleary.
I second that. It's entirely de minimis, and given the use for the extension, I'm very happy to second that approval.
It's been moved and seconded for approval. Members, please vote. Thank you, members. That's unanimous. It's approved. Members, if we can move to agenda item 14, the application number is 19/00448/73. It is a material amendment, and it is a removal of a condition 17 of an approval 15/00363/full dated the 19th of February 2016, and it relates to the local needs occupancy condition on this unit. I should just declare at this point, and forgive me, members, I have spoken to the Mrs. Jackson previously about this. It's personal, non-prejudicial and non-pecuniary.
Thank you, Chairman. There aren't any updates to the report, and as members will see, this relates to an application in respect of a dwelling, one of two dwellings actually, which were granted planning permission a couple of 3 years ago now, but in the village of Flaxton, and was subject to the local needs occupancy condition. And as set out in the report, this particular property remains unsold with that condition. And so in the intervening period, which I think is from October 2017, the property has been advertised for sale at a price that reflects that encumbrance on the property. But with no takers from anybody who would qualify with the local needs occupancy condition, and hence the application that we have before us tonight, Chairman, which is to actually seek to lift that local needs occupancy condition. And the effect of that would mean it's a house that anybody could occupy, not anybody with a local connection. So that's really the upshot of it. The key point for us really was being able to get a valuation of the property that reflected the housing market within which it sits. And obviously, as Flaxton is very close to York, that has its own particular housing market. It was appraised by Hunter's estate agents from Easingwold, who have concluded that the asking price did reflect the local needs occupancy condition. As you'll see, it's a sizeable property, and I think the estate agent's view was that that was what was affecting the take-up or lack of it, because it's quite a high-value property. I think the estate agent's view had been that if it was a smaller property, it might have been a different story, but that's not what we're dealing with. We have considered the application since we've received that estate agent's advice, and conclude that we think that an 18-month period is a long enough period to be exploring that marketplace. You'll see from the report that there have been some consultation responses in Section 5 of the report which aren't wholly in support of the application. The Parish Council, for example, do object and feel that the conditions should remain. The neighbour responses have been varied, Chairman. There's been support, but there's also been objection. Obviously, we're having to appraise it on the basis of the facts that we see, and we think that a genuine effort has been made to advertise and take the property with the condition in place, and that's not proved to be successful, and that an adequate period of time has taken place for that. So the officer recommendation is to approve the application. Take any questions?
I'll open it up to members for questions. Councillor Potter.
Why exactly do we have this local needs occupancy clause?
I think it's one of those policies that when we come to review the plan, I think we'll be thinking about this particular policy, and I see there's a lot of nodding of heads. The essence of the local needs occupancy clause, I think, has been a little bit misunderstood in its application, to be frank, since we had the policy introduced in 2013. The essence of our strategy for the distribution of market housing is, you really, if we start with that, is to direct, in the current plan, is currently to direct most of the development to the market towns, 90% of it, and that's apportioned out, as you know, in the plan, from Malton and Norton to Pickering to Kirby Moorside and Helmsley, but also an amount to go to the service villages, and that was roughly 10% of the requirement spread across those 10 service villages. And then beyond that, we don't actually, in the current plan, make any allocations beyond that level of settlement. So that's the sort of the bigger villages that have got a school, a bus service, a shop, those sorts of facilities. But in response to consultations in the plan and members' involvement in the plan at the time, I think there was a feeling that there still needed to be a policy that made provision for local needs in smaller villages. If there was a proven connection with somebody who'd lived there any period of time or worked there or were returning service persons, and the list is set out in the condition. And so where people were in those positions of making applications because they could say, well, there's a local need for this development, the plan would accommodate it, but the condition would be applied to the dwelling. And that's operated to varying degrees of success, I think, in the last 5 or 6 years. And those who have been on the planning committee longer than others will have seen appeal decisions where we've had appeals challenged, you know, where dwellings have had conditions. And actually on appeal, it's been 100% success rate, you know, in terms of the reason for retaining the conditions. But it is, in my opinion, quite a blunt tool. And as with all of these types of things, when you're introducing a new policy, sometimes you get an unintended consequence. And members may recall a plot in Terrington not so long ago where there was somebody who actually complied with the occupancy condition but couldn't get a mortgage because of the criteria. We ended up varying the condition to enable a mortgagee in possession clause to happen. So you learn as you go along with these sorts of things, I think. But obviously, as with any limiting condition, sometimes you get circumstances that change from when you granted the permission to where you are now. And that's what we're dealing with here, really, is that this dwelling has remained available. It's been advertised at a price that's reflected its diminished value and still not had a taker. And so we end up if we don't do something, we potentially end up with a dwelling that's unoccupied. So that's where we are. It's a judgment call. but I think we think that 18 months is a long enough period to have tested this.
Councillor Mason.
This is a quick question. We could probably take this up after as well. Do you think the occupancy plan actually restricts builders and from actually doing some of the works, actually puts them off from doing some of the developments?
I don't think so. I think most of them have tended to come forward from individual landowners who've had a severe requirement to either downsize or maybe have a family member who wants to live in the village, who wants to live in the plot and take that as, you know, they're not actually buying the plot. You see what I mean? It's not like a market scheme. But I think they all tend to have slightly different drivers as to why and how they come forward. The idea was not for this to be generating a huge amount of new dwellings in small villages, but to meet a local need that was seen to be there at the time. But obviously circumstances change, and that's unfortunate, but that's life, isn't it? You know, you start off on one on track and you end up going on another, and inevitably all of these have an individual human story behind them. Without going into the details of that, this is a situation where the dwellings exist, you know, and one of them is existing in accordance with the condition. It's the second one that isn't, but it is, you know, they're the facts of the case that we have to deal with and make a decision on at this point in time now.
Councillor Burr.
Thank you. I think we're at an interesting point at the moment at the council to review and revise, and I just want to pick up on what you said, Gary, about this particular one. What about the other one? Do we lift them both, or does one stay and one?
No, we don't lift them both. It's this one. I mean, the one dwelling is being occupied as the policy intended it to be. And who knows in 10 years' time if that person moves on or whatever happens, that there may well be still a local need for that if we still operate a local needs policy. We can only deal with them at a point in time, I suppose. It's been an interesting policy to work with, I think, is the most politic way I can refer to it. It is where we are. We have a policy in the plan which says how we will deal with applications to vary restricted occupancy conditions, which is your policy SP21. And I think the applicants have complied with that, the requirements of that policy.
If there are no further questions, I'm going to open it up for debate and pass it to the local member, Councillor Hope.
Yeah, thank you, Chairman. Difficult one is this, and first can I thank the officers for their hard work on this. It's a little minefield, I would think. It is needed, is this property by the occupant, and I'm going to move officers' agreement, officers' recommendation.
Councillor Potter.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Yeah, it's certainly interesting, this one, because on first looking at it, I thought, yeah, that sounds quite reasonable. But you may have gathered that there was a certain rhetorical in my question. Because the thought crossed my mind, investments can reduce as well as increase. I'm sure we've all heard that in the past. Now, this local needs occupancy clause, as far as I'm aware, was all about the local plan strategy where we decided that it was sensible to put development into those villages, other than the major developments, of course, but into the villages that had the right sort of infrastructure to take them. And therefore, the ones that didn't have the necessary infrastructure, it was really just for local needs, so there was some get out for developers to put in a certain number of houses into those villages that didn't really have the infrastructure, transport, pubs, shops, all the rest of it. Now, then I was thinking, well, if you build or convert whatever it was, a couple of very large houses, with the value of £500,000 to £600,000, to me that is purely speculative investment, because what was it really built? It surely was built contrary to the local planning strategy. If there's no real local need, do you look at this sort of property and think what the locals really need? There are a couple of £500,000 to £600,000 large developments. So suddenly I'm thinking, well, this was a speculative investment, and in the knowledge that there was a local needs clause on it, and unfortunately that speculative investment backfired. So the value presumably has got to reduce because they could sell it at that sort of price. So, and then of course, as Councillor Burr alluded to, the purchaser of the other property is immediately going to look at this if we overturn the local needs occupancy clause and say, well, why should mine have one on there? I want to apply to have that taken away. And suddenly that speculative investment was actually a sensible one, simply because it's completely overturned the policy of the council. So as it stands, I'm afraid I can't support this. Thank you.
I'm just going to ask Mr. Housden to come back in just to explain some of the circumstances.
I don't really want to go into the detail of the circumstances, but the need for this large house was to meet the needs of a local family at the time. Those needs have changed, and so there was a need at the time. And as I said earlier, nobody knows what's down the road, but those needs have changed, and the family have had now had to get to a situation where they're trying to sell the house to somebody else who might need a large house in the village, and that, or in the neighbouring parish, which is the sort of one of the qualifying criteria, and that hasn't thrown up anybody who qualifies to meet the condition. So they're left with a house that they need to sell, but there's not been a taker at it at a price that an estate agent had valued at a reasonable level to reflect the condition. And so they're really in a sort of catch-22 situation where to sell the house, they need to make it attractive to more people who can occupy the house on an open market basis. So their only option is to make an application to seek to lift the condition. So it wasn't that they didn't comply with the policy at the time, it's their family circumstances have changed. And that's all really I can say to you. It wasn't that it didn't comply at the time, it did. And circumstances have changed underneath them.
Right, I've got Councillor Burr, Councillor Cleary, and then Councillor Thackeray. So Councillor Burr, please.
Thank you, Chairman. 2013 seems a long, long time ago. Hindsight's a wonderful thing. At the time, it was thought that we were doing something that could be okay. We've learned from that. We've had a few issues around that, and we've had a lot of debate at planning about that. And I think probably rather than looking back, we look forward and we say we're approaching a time when we can look back and think about if things were good or bad and make something out of them. We can actually put in a new strategy, we can have a fresh look forward, and maybe we could start having a few more affordable houses in our villages. So there's lots to look forward to, and I think in this case 18 months is far too long for a house to be empty or unsold or whatever. So there has been quite a long time period. So in this instance I would support our officers, but what I'm really looking forward to is councillors talking about this and having a brand new strategy and really, really revising this clause that we've got, because it seems to throw up more anomalies than, you know, bad than good. So I will be moving that.
Thank you, Councillor Burr. Councillor Cleary.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Councillor Burr very nearly said exactly what I was going to say. So I will second it. I will add very briefly that, in fact, what we're looking at is the position where we're at. And at the moment, there's a stagnation in an ability for two families, one moving out and potentially one moving in. and that house to remain fluent in, or that property to remain fluent in the housing stock. If we allow this, then that will allow that house to be more readily available to the housing stock. So I will second that. Thank you.
Councillor Thackeray.
It's a question for Mr. Housen, really, just a clarification, because as I understand the condition, it relates to occupancy, not construction. It's not a question of whether it's the family built this house. That's irrelevant, because anybody could build a house. It's a matter of whether or not they're qualified to live in it. Yeah, that was it. That's all.
Councillor Herb, you've got the final word. It has been moved and seconded for approval, but I'll give you the final word.
Yeah, just a matter of clarification. I think I moved it in the first place.
You moved it. And I think Councillor Burr seconded it, I think. Yeah.
Apologise, yeah. We'll both move it, and we can have a double seconder or a thirder.
Yeah. Right. Since it's been moved and seconded, please can members vote. Thank you, members. That's 9 votes for, 1 abstention. It is approved. If I can draw members' attention to the list, which is on page, and if you bear with me a second, I'll tell you in a minute. Starts at page 180. It is a list of the delegated decisions, and it goes through to page 187. Members, thank you very much. Sorry, Councillor Potter.
Just a quickie. We've got numbers 29 and 36 that appear to be very similar, yeah, and neither have a decision.
I was about to come in on that before you beat me to it. The situation is that the approval was there ready to go, but the agent hadn't confirmed the materials, and so it's inadvertently appeared. It has now been approved, both of them. It's a planning and a listed building for the same property, so it's a little bit of a ghost in the machine there. Both approved. Okay.
Members, can I just suggest a site visit? This was in relation to the Derwent Mount application, York Road, Melton. I've got a suggested date of Wednesday the 12th of June at 10 o'clock.
I see. Councillor Andrews obviously is the committee member, so could attend anyway. It probably would make sense as to, if he is at the next meeting, to go to the site visit, but we'll send him the details.
Okay.